Welcome to this week's anime podcast. This week we have a topic that I picked because I'm a snob, or am I? We'll find out by the end. Which is, are we as a species too stupid to finish a sentence? Too stupid to survive? Are we doomed to become extinct because we're just so fucking stupid? Well, we'll find out during the podcast. But this week we have our usual three, one from Scotland, one from Ireland, one from Townland, from England. I am going under the Gypsy Head title, whatever. I Bet My Wookiee, which is a reference to Ralph Wiggum. And with me, we have, I believe that's Dan, coming from a certain part of England, with the Gypsy title, Charles Darwin. How you doing, Dan?
I'm pretty good this week. Pretty good.
Been swimming in any quarries lately?
Not in this weather.
Yeah, it's not good weather for that. Also, I have James, who has the Gypsy title Stacked Himbo, which I don't get, but I'm sure he'll tell me. How you doing, James?
How are you getting on? Just finishing a two-week run of night shifts, so maybe not going to be the most eloquent that I've ever been, but also my sleep deprivation might give me a unique insight into the addled mind of the average citizen. So it's been quite ironic to say that we're going to do an episode about stupidity, and the fact that we started recording this episode without actually recording, and Alex's amazing introduction there, where he was able to trip over almost every word, really means that we probably are not the best people to throw shade on on stupid people.
I just wanted to bring up right now that I hadn't told James that his voice sounds like he's on helium until right now, because I wanted him to make fun of me without realizing his voice sounds like he's on helium, which is great. Anyway, we'll move on. Basically, I think I'd like to start the podcast with something very simple, which is, what do I mean by stupid? Because it's probably, it is a relative term. So what do I mean by stupid? And what do I mean by, people are stupid, or at least large chunks of the population are stupid? I suppose it's a combination. When I mean stupid, I think it's probably a combination of different things. So like something that's not the fault of individual people, which is a lack of educational options. That's certainly not someone's fault if their family were poor, or they were born in the UK or born in certain parts of Ireland. But it's also a combination of that and something they do maybe have some control over, which is basically things like open-mindedness. Lack of open-mindedness would be obviously a sign of stupidity. Ego, what's known as Dunning-Kruger, which is kind of a form of confirmation bias, which is you have a small degree of information and you think you know everything, otherwise known as Donald Trump and people like Boris Johnson, So I think it's, what I mean by that is something that it's complicated. It's not something that you wholly have control over. It's not wholly people's fault if they're stupid, but some of it is their people's fault, the combination of narcissism, ego, and whatever else. But either way, it fundamentally prevents, I think, people seeing the world as it is. So we're going to be talking a lot about global warming. It's one of the most obvious signs that people are just not taking in these types of complicated generation-long problems. So yeah, that's kind of what I mean by stupidity. Dan, what would you think of when you, I know it's such a basic question, but when I use the word stupid, what do you think of?
I think for me, it's sort of, you can have knowledge of facts and you can be intelligent, but I think a stupid person is someone that can have all of those attributes and still not able to connect the dots between the facts, where it's almost like they compartmentalize different parts of their intelligence or sort of knowledge, and they're unable to link it together. So like, I know people that are highly intelligent in certain fields, but generally they're quite stupid, and it's just because they're not able to sort of spread that intelligence across and make those sort of linkages.
Einstein, God, I'm really proving the point here today. Anyway, Einstein once said that while he could believe just about that the universe, no, sorry, that he could believe that the human stupidity was infinite, but they had questions about whether the universe was. And there's other fairly famous quotes about this issue. Certainly Stephen Hawking had his views on the general stupidity of the population. James, when you think of that word stupid, other than an image of myself popping up, or maybe of some other people who you used to know in Edinburgh, what do you think of when you think of that word? Like, could you define it?
Yeah, I mean, in the same way that you've got different types of intelligence, you've got different types of stupid, I guess. And I don't really think about it in connection with education, because, you know, as we've discussed loads of times on the podcast, education is pretty much like the quickest route to being a fucking brain genius. Because education in, you know, the Western world is not there to educate you, it's there to keep you in a state of befuddlement. So the smartest people tend to, you know, like have some good education, but never really got on with it, or didn't really play within the balls of the system, or were intelligent enough to know what was happening. I think it's maybe a lack of intellectual curiosity that tends to strike a lot of people. Again, that's partly to do with the way that things are mostly taught. It's not very inductive to actually learning. But also, a lot of people seem to wear their ignorance as a, you know, a badge to be proud of, and that is pretty much encouraged at every level of society. You also see it in different ways, though. Like, I mean, anyone that's had to deal with car mechanics, they always seem to treat everyone that doesn't know as much about cars as they do as idiots. Or you get it with plumbers and things like that. In some ways, that's true, because they've got a certain type of intelligence. They have the skills or the knowledge about how these things work. But, you know, would they know anything about a political situation or historical fact, or, you know, the actual science behind it? So it comes in very different shapes and sizes. But I think in the terms that we're talking about would be more to do with a willful ignorance and the inability or the lack of interest in quotation marks, bettering someone, bettering yourself, if that makes sense.
No, it does. And I do think the kind of the willful ignorance kind of celebration of ignorance is a really good definition for stupidity, because it fits into that whole I don't want to be hearing from experts thing, which came about over the last, I suppose, half decade or decade now. And, you know, and you can see that in lots of places. You know, we don't need to, people can already think of the place in their head where that's an issue, you know.
Here's an example that a lot of people will have to deal with. You know, currently in my work situation, there's a lot of people that are effectively just not doing the job. And that's their prerogative, you know, and all workers' rights when it comes to shirking on the job. But where it's stupid is by not doing the job properly, they actually make more work for themselves or make more work for everyone else in the entire department. I'm sure we've all had to face very similar situations at work. And that to me is a form of stupidity, because it's like, oh, if you do 5 minutes of work now, it saves you 40 minutes of work down the line. So it's those sort of like, you know, reasoning or ability to just sit and think about something and draw some conclusions from it is usually where people start going wrong.
Yeah, no, I can see that. All right. So I suppose we'll ask the obvious question, which is, do we think that, you know, I wouldn't say most, but do you think a very sizable chunk of the population would be or could be defined in those in that way as basically having confirmation bias, reveling in ignorance, the whole Dunning-Kruger thing, lacking in critical thinking, or is this my own snobbery? No, I'll put my cards on the table and say that I think, I wouldn't put a statistic on it, but I do think it's a sizable chunk of the population for a variety of reasons, some of them their own fault, some of them society's fault, some of it complicated and God knows whose fault it is. But I do think it's there. I think you can see it in terms of lots of different things from, you know, people not, you know, the kind of anti-expert, you know, trend that been happening for a while, the kind of complete inability really to get people's heads around climate change and the unbelievable danger, which is probably unavoidable at this point, of what levels of destruction we don't know. But again, you can find some links at the bottom of the podcast and maybe give you a hint. But there's other things as well. I mean, the left has a tendency, and for those who are listening now, you may be fans of Adam Curtis or just fans of Nine Inch Nails. And you can find a fair amount of stuff from, like, in his work about basically the 60s, 70s generation of leftists and how they kind of, went inward. They kind of abandoned kind of outward politics because they felt the population, the working class white population in Britain, for example, were bigoted and ignorant. And you can find a lot of stuff in his latest documentary, which is out at the moment, where they actually, he found footage of them being interviewed and them going, oh, they're stupid idiots. They don't know what they're doing. There is a tendency on the left to say that. And I know I might be falling into a trap of saying that, but it is nonetheless what I feel to some degree. I don't then think, oh, I should become a Stalinist and an authoritarian system should be put in place. You know, I still hope people can learn maybe more critical thinking and learn how to be a bit more rational, but I'd be lying if I didn't say I think it's one of the biggest problems around at the moment. What about you guys? What do you think? Do you think people or a large chunk of the population are stupid, or am I just being a snob?
Yeah, no, I think you're being a snob, which is something that you are sort of prone to do, I think, partly because of your upbringing.
Be careful, buddy. We can stretch our own stones.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you didn't fucking grow up in a scheme in Leith. So I think what happens in the left a lot of the time is they're unwilling to talk to people at their own level. There is definitely over, you know, because of Thatcher in the UK anyway, I'm not sure what it was like in Ireland, but, you know, there was like a huge intellectual vein in the working class. In the UK, and that had to be broken. And we saw, you know, we're at the tail end of a 30-40 year attack on working class intellectualism. So that would be my first point there. But yeah, it's just like very often it's just like an unwilling to engage with people on their own terms. I mean, how many times have you been down the pub and you get chatting to someone and, you know, they're not from a great background or, you know, haven't got a great job, maybe working Tesco's or something like that. And then they start talking to you maybe about philosophy and it's like the first time, you know, it sounds like, you know, stuff that maybe we would have discussed when we were 13 or 14. So it sounds like complete baby talk when they're, you know, they're like, oh man, have you ever thought, like, do you know if we're actually real or not? But what that shows you is that they've probably not felt comfortable with lots of people to discuss that idea. And, you know, and they're in their 30s, and this is maybe like the first time that they've, you know, decided like, oh, actually, maybe this person will understand where I'm coming from with this. So I think that gives you a good idea of where a lot of people are. I think a lot of people are actually genuinely very interested and curious, and it's beaten out with, you know, it's beaten out of them at school, and that's what school's for. Like, even the most fucking stupid of, you know, right winger that you see gammon faced are usually got an interest in history. Now, it's usually shit history that has been fed to them through a propaganda model, but, you know, they're interested in it. They've got some sort of, you know, interest in watching documentaries or, you know, reading a couple of books, or to, you know, to put it back into the mechanic thing. Again, you know, you get some people that are very interested in cars. Now, that's not usually seen as a sign of intelligence, but they're amassing this huge, you know, database of knowledge. And it just happens to be in society that it's not seen as important as it would be as, you know, things that we're interested in, because, you know, the cultural capital is a lot higher of being interested in politics or, you know, being interested in history than it is usually about cars. So it's just the way that society is structured rather than to do with people, I think.
It is interesting that you jumped, and maybe it was because I was making that reference to the white working class in the UK, but I wasn't actually referring to stupidity as a kind of class thing. I think some of the most stupid people I've ever met have been upper middle class, to be honest with you. Boris Johnson is objectively one of the most stupid people I've ever seen in a position of power. And I'd almost even say that Trump, in certain levels, seems more, not intelligent, but certainly more capable. But yeah, no, I don't think, you know, I don't think stupidity when I'm talking about stupidity, I'm not talking about gamins in the UK who voted for whatever. We're not going to go down that road of talking about the thing that everyone has been talking about for 5 years. But, you know, I think it's across the population is more what I'm trying to talk about. Dan, you certainly would come in contact with a lot of stupid people, some of them swimming in quarries. Do you think that whatever percentile of the population is quote unquote stupid? Or am I a snob, or are you a snob like me?
I can be, but generally what I always find is people tend to respond to how you engage with them. So like I can be around people and they'll just have just your average mundane sort of conversation about what's in the paper, you know, whatever. It doesn't really matter. It's just a nonsense conversation, and that's fine. Doesn't engage me, but when I then engage with those people and it's something that I'm more likely to be interested in, I think when you show an interest in something and someone doesn't necessarily know, if they're reasonably intelligent, then they sort of engage with you with curiosity. And I find that tends to be the case with most people that I know on a personal basis. I think when you look at stupidity and you're kind of looking at it on a wider social basis, if you look at social media, then you really see it. And that's where, like, my town, I often think it's a case of the squeaky wheel getting the most grease, where stupid people are louder, because why would you engage with people screaming on a social media thread at each other if you're reasonably sort of intelligent? I think you don't necessarily see the smarter end of people because they're not going to engage in areas where it's just a pissing match. But on the other side of things, I can be a snob as well, and it's something that I actively try not to be, because I realize that it's I wouldn't like if someone was like that with me, if I didn't know aspects of a certain area, field or whatever, because I'm always interested to learn more. So I try and approach other people as if they might be interested in learning more about things, and not necessarily that I know more than them about things or anything, but I always find like a dialogue with people usually leaves me quite surprised and happy at their level of intelligence and the kind of response I get back. But then, you know, there are really stupid people. So you keep making the references to swimming in the quarry, which is a reference to a contretemps I've had with an incredibly stupid person on social media who is absolutely nasty, and people respond to her with nastiness, whereas me and a group of friends have found that if you actually respond to her with idiocy, she can't cope with it. So we basically accuse her of swimming in a quarry, even though she's sort of like late 60s probably. It's an absolute absurdity, but she can't comprehend that. She can be nasty back to people, but she can't comprehend absurdity.
It's a beautiful way of combating stupidity, or this mean-spiritedness. I suppose what I kind of, it's kind of, I'm not dancing around the point, but the thing that would be kind of a central plank of my snobbery would be that there's so much fucking evidence and of quote unquote stupidity. You just said something quite interesting there a while ago, Dan. You said that the greasy wheel or the squeaky wheel, pardon me, gets the grease. Is it just the public perception or my perceptions of stupidity is in fact just that there's just a lot of stupid people on the internet, and that before, in a time before this huge platforming, that it was there, it was always there, but that it just wasn't so obvious, and that what really I'm talking about is that the public platforming of stupidity is really the issue. Basically, is there a lot of evidence that there's more stupidity now than there was in the past?
Yeah, I think one of the big things is that as people spend more time on social media, it's not really real life, though. And people act on social media a way that they're not really going to act in real life. Now, some people will do, but the sort of rudeness and the crassness that you get from a lot of people, if you met them in a pub, they more than likely are not going to have the balls to talk to you that way. And, you know, someone like you, Alex, who is not you're not a hugely sociable person. You've not always been interested in going down the pub and chatting to random people. That's perfectly fine. But I think that means that you then get a lot of your idea and interaction from people from the only medium that you really interact with them in is by going online. And if you spend a lot of time around people and a lot of, you know, different random people you meet, I think you get a very different sense of how people act and how they are. And I think most people are genuinely very curious about the world.
In fairness, a lot of my kind of opinions of people's intelligence would also be based on the fact that I ran a company for several years where majority of my customers were Americans and American tourists, which are not generally known for their open-mindedness or indeed inquisitiveness. So that probably didn't help either.
I mean, actually, what you've done is just reminded me about working with the public. And I actually, because I haven't done it for a year, thankfully, I want to take everything back. And actually, the public are fucking idiots and they're horrible people and should all be put to the sword. Because now I'm just having all these flashbacks of actually having to deal with the public on a day-to-day basis in a menial role. And boy, they're fucking horrible.
I'll have a quick aside for listeners, which is that that James and I, when we lived in Edinburgh, for those who listen to the podcast regularly, know we used to live together. We once went to a party. I think James disappeared off to do something or to do somebody, but I was there late, and it was this guy who I won't name him. He's not listening, but I won't name him. And he'd never had a job in his life, and he was 23. Which I just found just stunning. I just couldn't imagine a person never having a job. But we were having a disagreement about human nature, and there was everyone else was like, no, people are shit. Like, people are assholes when they can be, at the very least. And he was like, oh, no, that's just, you know, this side or the other. I was like, well, how would you know? You've never had a fucking job. You certainly never had a job working in a shop or working in Ford, dealing with the public. It can be, you know, anyone who's listening to this who's ever had a job, like in a shop or going, I went door to door, fucking hell. Like, you see an awful lot of mean-spirited, in, you know, horribleness and stupidity. And I do think we'd be disingenuous to pretend, because people know better, that the population is you know, because Dan was saying, you know, oh, you can meet people and in certain circumstances, they can be more open. And I'm sure that's true. I'm sure people can be. But these are the same people who ignore, you know, just stuff that's staring them in the face and kind of get angry at the idea of experts. Like, not everybody. I'm not talking about everybody. I'm talking about a section of the population who just are not interested in accessing facts or even kind of being open-minded, who are mean, you know. Yeah, so, I mean, is there... And there's a lot of evidence of it from, you know, just multiple decades long, just lack of interest in what's going on with the climate to, again, issues of the facts about immigration. Let's just take Britain, for example. The facts of immigration are pretty fucking clear, which is immigrants contribute a huge amount to the fucking tax base. They take very little out in return. They're not the cause of the problems, but fuck knows, for decades now, since the fucking Rivers of Blood speech by Enoch Powell, that's been the public perception, you know? Dan, what do you think?
You caught me on the spot there. I think in terms, if you're looking at something like immigration, and that is a good example of what I said earlier, where people are, they might know specific they might have specific knowledge and specific facts about things, but because they're either unwilling or incapable of connecting together, like sort of networking those facts, they can't draw the right conclusions from information that they might they might well understand. And where you said, like, when I say I'm surprised by people not necessarily being as stupid as you might think. I mean, I'm not saying that they're not willfully ignorant. I just mean, like, the seeds of curiosity are definitely there with a lot of people, but they're just, as James has said, and which is what I think myself, is curiosity is beaten out of you. That's what school's about. That was whenever you would ask a question, there was always this kind of, it's almost an audible sigh from everyone around you that you're asking a question. It's always been evident to me that is one of the main strains of anti-intellectualism in, I don't know how it is for the rest of the UK, but in England, is that curiosity is bad.
I don't know. I mean, I think a lot of the problems in the world, obviously, are most of the problems in the world are highly complicated, and there's not like a simple solution to most of them, other than just, you know, killing the wealthy and stringing them up from from the wherever, stringing them up from the gibbet, if we can make a gibbet. I think things are mostly complicated, and the solutions are complicated, but it's hard not to say that, you know, if we had a certain larger section of the population who was less stupid, and that can mean more open-minded, more willing to accept facts without getting their hackles up, you know, that we wouldn't be dealing with climate change, really. I mean, a kind of a central plank, probably the biggest plank, is that. And I find it very, very hard to understand how anybody cannot be unbelievably terrified, or indeed haven't been motivated for, let's just be nice and say it's been since the 80s or the 90s. But, you know, it's been fairly fucking clear for a very long time now. And again, some people are concerned about it and some aren't. But anyway, again, this could be my snobbery again.
Here's the point that might be tangential, but maybe worth exploring. But do you not think that what is in the media and the way that media is consumed has a large effect on this? Because if you think about, you know, let's go back to films of the 60s and 70s, where, you know, what you would be able to see in the cinema was a wide range of, you'd have your, you know, your stupid crap, like, you know, every generation has. But then, you know, think about the new wave in American cinema, which was hugely popular, where, you know, you've got very intelligent films that are able to work on one level, where if you're not that interested in film, or you're not, you know, too interested in anything, it's just a good action film. But, you know, if you're there and you want to get your teeth into something, it's, you know, it's quite deep, and there's a lot that you can take from it. And today, what's on at the cinema, it's more often than not just mindless popcorn shite. Where you find the real irony comes in is what people of a certain, let's just say Guardian readers, think is intelligent is often very fucking facile and one-dimensional. For example, something like Black Mirror, where everyone's like, oh, fucking Black Mirror, I fucking love Black Mirror, it's so intelligent. Where it's actually, no, it isn't. It's really one-dimensional. Where, you know, some things maybe do have more depth where you're not expecting them. You know, it's like, for example, some stuff in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I'm not saying that they are films of intellectual behemoths, but, you know, there's at least two dimensions going on with some of their stuff. And so it's, you know, people say, like, oh, you should be reading more. But the sort of stuff that they say that you should read is Orwell or fucking Harry Potter, which is guff. It is bollocks. So maybe, like, actually having stuff that tests people, or actually, you know, teaches you about the world that has a conversation, would be a way forward. And I do think that's why podcasts are so popular now. Obviously, a lot of podcasts are just, you know, some fucking Chads chatting away shit, much like this podcast, Chads, fellow Chads. But yeah, most podcasts are usually about something, and usually are development of the world, or discussing it, or looking at it into great detail. So you kind of get your swings and roundabouts there. But do we think that maybe if the media was, which is what most people spend their free time consuming when they're not working, maybe if that had more depth to it, do you not think that maybe the world would then have a bit more depth to it?
Well, that assumes that when media at any point in history was quote unquote highbrow, that was reflected within the general population. I think if you were to look at the 70s, for example, in America or in Britain, and you were to say, okay, there's all this really experimental cinema and kind of great music, etc., and then you were to ask maybe a segment of the population, what would be your views on, I don't know, the wealth of these things, you might get some good results, you might not. I always find it amazing that there was a poll done recently in the UK. And again, this might prove your point. They were asking, what's the things you're really looking forward to now that Brexit has been achieved? And the number one thing was reintroducing the death penalty, which, I mean, but Dan, you wanted to say something.
Yeah, I think going on from James's point where I think sort of when you're trying to engage with people and they're basically pure cognitive bias is prevents you from having any kind of engagement with them that might change their mind or might educate them. I think his point about media consumption to some degree, it's not just media sort of films and books, but like the whole environment you're in, you're fighting against sort of unconscious cognitive bias that they might not even be aware of. That's sort of just the society that you're in. But also I feel like when it comes to trying to understand stupidity, it's difficult when you know something, it's difficult then to imagine what it's like to not know it. And that, I think that is when it comes to sort of feeling like you're surrounded by stupid people. I think because you can't understand what it's like to not know things that you know anymore. And I think that has a sort of a big effect on your feeling of being surrounded by stupidity.
I think actually what stupidity probably is, if we're going to maybe define it and say like what makes a stupid person, and I think it's either an inability or more likely a refusal for self-reflection. I think that the only way that you sort of develop and grow as a person is to examine your beliefs and what you think. And if you do that, obviously things change over time, intellectually and personally. You know, films that you might have liked 20 years ago, 12 years ago, you might end up hating because of the way that your tastes change, or things that you believed back in the day are now going to not be what you believe as you're going forward. And, you know, it may not be always be right, but at least it's going forward as a person, where some people effectively basically get to about 15 or 16 and then that's it. They don't develop as a person. That's who they are for effectively the rest of their life. Now, that's what to me would be considered stupid.
Basically, Ron Pickering. But which, if anyone remembers that, oh God, rest your soul. Yeah, I suppose something we haven't talked about, which can obviously plays a huge role. I think it's maybe the best defense against labeling chunks of the population as stupid, which is, I think that there's a kind of, I don't know if it's evolutionary, it probably is evolutionary. There's kind of a culture at the very least of tribalism, which is a tautology, but you know, the people are quite tribal, whether it be religious, cultural, you know, class, whatever it might be. And that's kind of one of the prime movers of what we think. So that if, for example, if my tribe, if that was anarchist or the Irish people or whatever, believe a certain thing, there's a fairly good chance that I'll go along with that, or at least a high statistical chance. It's also kind of, we're also driven very much, as we've discussed in different podcasts over the last year plus, we're driven also a lot by magical thinking. And so the kind of that wish to see a god or to see the fairies or to see whatever, that's kind of in us as well. And it's, and it makes sense from an evolutionary perspective that we'd have that. I think the greatest defense against the idea that they're, you know, large chunks of the population is that we're driven by those kind of very kind of hardwired into us motivations. And so that you can have a really, really smart person who just for those kind of biases can't access, you know, the information or can't process it properly. What do you think about that, Dan?
I think it's a really good point. I think when you come to these sort of conversations, you have to remember that humans are thinkers, but humans are animals. And a lot of the time, the animal part is so deeply hardwired that it can quite easily overcome the thinking part.
Yeah, I think what you have to remember is that no one is 100% consistent. Everyone has beliefs that are incongruous with other beliefs that they have. And I think if a lot more people were more honest with that, like, things would be a lot easier in all forms of discourse. We all have different views and stuff because of our personal circumstances. So it's, for instance, you know, like, there's lots of stuff on the left that is maybe is your line where you say, like, if you cross this, obviously then you're not leftist. But then there's obviously things that are in gray areas where, for example, like, just to take something off the top of my head, like landlordism. Now, I would say that if you're a landlord, then you're a parasite, and you're probably, you know, not really believe in the left wing things that you say. But let's take someone that has, you know, like, has inherited a house and there is someone in it, and they can't get rid of them for whatever reason. So, but that's their main source of income because of COVID has left them out. So there you go. That's someone's personal circumstances has led them to this situation. So there's two things that you could do there. You could either just say, like, actually, you know what? I don't agree with this scenario that I'm in, but it's the best one for my personal life. Which is true for most of us. We all have to deal with society in one way or another. So, you know, I work for a company that is probably, you know, doing a lot of bad things in the world. We all buy Coca-Cola, or, you know, we fucking give money to Google, or et cetera, et cetera. So no one's free of sin. Or the other thing you could do is sort of just stick your head in the sand and just be like, actually, you know what, I'm right, and the facts have changed to do with this, and, you know, I'm infallible. That would show you, you know, that's a sort of very different type of, I would say, a difference in intelligence there. Does that make any sense to you guys?
No, that makes complete sense. I do think, though, that I think it's very, very hard, given all those qualifications and given the complexity of the situation, to accept, is a better word, that whatever exactly is going on, confirmation bias, Dunning-Kruger, fucking tribalism, magical thinking, situational problems, whatever, all these different things, that those things would still, despite the overwhelming evidence of the type of danger that the world is facing, or rather the world will survive, the biosphere will survive, hopefully. But I mean more about the human species. I just can't accept those qualifications, though there are important and they're probably true qualifications. I just still can't accept that as a reason to not take action, to not kind of listen to what's been said for 30, 40 years now by climate science. And that's kind of my main motivation for this particular topic, was just like a general frustration, just general despair at the lack of interest. And it's actually gotten worse. I think probably more people would have thought climate change was an issue in the 90s, by which I mean they would have said, oh, that probably exists, but, you know, we got some time to deal with it. Whereas now I think it's become polarized to such an extent that people are now, who don't like the fact that it exists, have politicized it and said, okay, well, it doesn't exist. And that's very, very hard for me to accept, no matter the reasoning for why people think that. I just think it's an existential issue. There's not really, I can't really let people off on that.
Yeah, I feel your frustration with that, because I mean, one of the main drivers for my politics is my understanding of how serious climate change is and will be. But then again, it's another one where, probably like me, you've spent a lot of time reading up. Like I read scientific journals, I read books dedicated to it, because it is something that interests me, that existential threat to humanity. Because as misanthropic as I can be, I do actually think humanity is something worth preserving, because for all we know, there is nothing else like it in the universe. And sentience to the degree where we're able to, capable of reflective thought, is something that I personally feel is really precious and really worth saving. So yeah, I do understand your frustration with that.
Well, I think it comes down to a couple of things when it comes to the climate chaos. One of them is to do with the fact that people's imagination is so fucking shot to bits that they can't imagine a better world. And if they can't even imagine a better world, how can we get them to imagine a worse world effectively? Because that's like what needs to happen for climate change to be dealt with, is for people to give up some of their creature comforts to live on a habitable planet. And people have got no interest in doing that, because the rich at the moment, there would be no point to it, because the rich would still get to do what they want. And it just means that, you know, your fucking holiday to Magaluf is gone, or your 24-hour electricity is gone. You know, for 100%, the scenario that will probably play out in a not-too-distant future, I'm surprised it's not actually happening in Austin at the moment, where some people will have electricity rationed, so they won't have it for 24 hours a day. But the rich will have it for 24 hours a day, and it'll be free. That is 100% scenario that I know will happen in our lifetime. Now, it may not happen in the UK or Ireland, but it'll happen in America, or it'll happen in France or something like that. Though, you know, it is more likely to be UK or US in that scenario. So these are the things that you have to get people over to get to them. And it's also, you know, in the 90s, there was a sort of a growing sense of internationalism, which is just, you know, because of austerity, and as we discussed in a couple of podcasts, like, internationalism is gone as an idea. It's just falling back down to nation states, as we're effectively seeing, you know, the fall of the capitalist empire. You know, as we've talked about the fall of the Roman Empire before, is, you know, it stopped being, you know, Italians stopped thinking of themselves as going, being able to go up to Scotland, as the same way that, you know, Scottish people saw their life completely change under the fall of the Roman Empire. And that's where we are now. So I think it's possible. And I think you're wrong when you say that things are complicated. I think most things actually have overnight solutions. It's just that we have a political class and a political media that are unwilling to actually frame it in the really simple terms that people need to have things put forward to them, which is things like, you know what, planes are gone. It's just the way that it is because of the amount of fuel that they use. Like, yeah, it's not great, but also, you know what, wind is infinite, so we'll just have to go back to using that. These are the ways that you have to frame these things, instead of this hand-wringing, or just being like, oh, well, you know, I guess we'll just hope that it works out.
No, I take that criticism. I get it. I just don't really. I mean, one of the articles that people find underneath contains a kind of, it's a hypothetical, obviously, because it's about the future. But there's a, and it's been, it's existed quite for quite a while in science fiction, that the species will actually, to some degree, separate into a kind of an upper echelon, who will live longer because of bio engineering, who will live in kind of enclosed communities with enormous wealth. And not that that's, we're not that far off from that already, but it'd become even more obvious if there is, if the species survives at all, it'll become even more obvious. But certainly the amount of bunkers that are being built by people like Bezos and by Elon Musk in places like New Zealand should tell you everything you need to know about what they see is coming and what they think is they're going to make the most of it while they can in terms of money. Also, we had one of our previous episodes was about the stock market, and had the stock markets completely detached from the everyday economy. So I you know, don't know why I said that, but anyway, I suppose my that doesn't give me any. And now I remember that doesn't give me any realistic hope that whatever is the cause of this, from material conditions affecting it to just some, you know, lack of open mind, to tribalism, to magical thinking, to all sorts of different things. I just don't have any realistic hope that, that those things can be overcome. And at the very least, an enormous kind of genocide of people dying in droughts, in famines, along the borders of Fortress Europe, as the fucking European Union basically polices it if it doesn't collapse in the meantime. And the same in America, with the, maybe in different ways. Yeah, do you guys have any realistic hope that whatever exactly is the issue here, because we can disagree about whether it's stupidity or it's the ruling elite, and it's a stupid ruling elite, that's we can agree on that. Do you guys have any hope that these types of issues can be overcome, and some version of the kind of drastic, horrific future that science has been warning about for quite some time can be overcome? I know that's not a very happy ending for the podcast, but I suppose people need to be woken up a bit.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I don't see, there's no way out, basically. And I think COVID is such a good example of why. If you remember in the early weeks of COVID, when we were talking about it this time last year, and people were like, oh, well, you know, maybe this will show that, like, maybe we need to work together and people should be looking after each other better, and it'll give governments to kick up the arse that they need. And that lasted all of 2 weeks. And we were on this podcast going, no, what's going to happen is this. And lo and behold, everything we said was going to happen pretty much happened. And that's because we understand the systemic structures that exist that force society down the routes that we're going down, even if they're counterintuitive to their own life. And the fact that, you know, in Ireland and the UK, that we are still fucking dealing with the COVID crisis in the form that we are, a problem that was easily fucking solved, an easily solvable problem, but government was unwilling and actually did everything that it could to not take the proper steps to look after itself and its citizens, tell you that as something as easily remedied as COVID, when things start getting hairy when it comes to climate chaos, we're done for. There's no fucking society structures that are going to propagate and help people. So, you know, as we've said in the podcast before, get yourself a fucking an axe and a shield and get ready for some good old Dark Ages raiding, because if you want to be able to, if you're our age, we're probably kind of already fucked. But, you know, I've got a kid on the way, and if he or she wants to get to their 50s or 60s, they're probably going to have to be closer to a Viking than to an aging post-punk.
Oh, you're not that old, James. Certainly this is why I bought a kilt, because I want to fit in with my clan of skinhead coastal raiders. Dan, what about you? I'll give you the last word. Do you have any realistic hope that whatever stupidity or whatever it is preventing us from action, that that's going to be overcome?
Well, given that I planned from a reasonably young age to not start a family because of this, then I'm not particularly optimistic either. I mean, I don't mean to really bum people out, but I only see things getting worse, and things only seem to get worse. So I don't see how I can be naively optimistic about it. I'd like to be wrong. I would really love to be wrong, to be honest. I don't necessarily think we're talking about full human extinction, but I think society as we know it is pretty much done for.
I don't think you're going to basically better that as an indictment of stupidity or tribalism or whatever else is causing this. Sorry, guys. I mean, we'd like to be optimistic, but we would be stupid if we ignored all the glaring evidence that's pointing in which direction we're headed. All I'd just say is get yourself a kilt and axe. Get yourself about 20 people for a shield wall. Learn how to sail. That'd be very handy. And make sure you're not anywhere near the equator. That's all we can say to you. Okay, we'll leave it at that. Rather depressing end. If you enjoyed the podcast, you must be depressive like ourselves, in which case, please do like it and subscribe or whatever else you want to do on platforms like Facebook and Twitter, which are horrible. Or you can email us if you have any, if you want to be a future irregular co-host or even a regular co-host, you can email us at anarchistreadings@gmail.com. Or if you just want to email us, feel free. The world's a horrible place. You might as well talk to us and kvetch with us. But that's been me and my snobbery. I have gone under the Gypsy title, I Bet My Wookie. Goodbye, folks. We've been also talking with Dan, who went under the Gypsy title, Charles Darwin. Goodbye, Dan.
Goodbye. I also would just like to state that I'm not depressed about it because I quite enjoy chaos. So, hey, you know, got to make the most of it.
That was very much fulfilling the anarchist stereotype. And finally, goodbye to prospective father Jimbo, otherwise known as Stacked Himbo.
Nice to see that Dan has gone full Joker mode. Some people just want to watch the world burn, Mr. Wine. So, yeah, maybe, fuck it, become the Joker. Go full Joker mode. That's the way to get out of this situation.
We do live in a society after all.
Margaret Thatcher wouldn't want to hear that. Okay, guys, that's us for this week. We'll see you next week when we will be discussing something.
Goodbye, folks.
Bye.